Welcome to the Rusk Report on the Bet AM 1520. We have a humanitarian and accountant with us, Harry Dorvillier. And I was familiar with him going several times to Haiti with the Hope for Tomorrow Foundation to donate hundreds of surgeries and hundreds of thousands of dollars of medical supplies at the Immaculate Conception Hospital in Haiti. And he's our guest today, Harry Dorvillier. He's a CPA, graduate of Pace University in New York, 34 years in the healthcare industry. He discovered a law that was enacted in the United States, and we're going to talk about that. And he's really basically an unofficial ambassador to Haiti and helps the people out there. Why don't we first talk about this life that you helped save 13 years ago. A woman came to the hospital on the verge of death, and you convinced the doctors with Hope for Tomorrow to deliver the baby, and it was a miracle. Tell us all about it, Harry Dorvillier.
Yes, good morning, Brian, and good morning, everyone that's listening. And my name is Harry Dorvillier, and it was a pleasure to deliver over to Haiti the Immaculate Conception that 250 operations to the people of Haiti that did not have enough equipment for them to survive after the earthquake. And we know the situation was very archaic, and it was very awkward. The system of health care out there was not properly equipped. The doctors, the nurses, the environment was not proper to deliver the care. But we are actually, in fact, deliver those care. And when we came that Sunday, it was a Saturday night, and at the same, the next Sunday was a Mother's Day in Haiti for all the mothers. Well, most of the staff stay home. And when we got there, it was like a miracle. When it was like 3:30, when the administrator approached me and said that we have a situation here. Well, the woman was on the yard for over 6 days, and the doctor did not come, the anesthetist did not come to get the procedure done. And we asked the staff to really come and help. And certainly the anesthetist come and come in my ear and say, Harry, go get the women. And we just bring the women into the operation room by translating to her, and we put her to sleep. And as the baby come around, the baby was coming drowned, and there was no oxygen coming to the post. And we say, hopefully we didn't have no hope. And all of a sudden, our staff take over. When our staff take over, by doing CPR, by actually, take the baby upside down, try to calm the baby, and it was nothing. And hopefully all our students was very anxious, and our staff was very anxious and not know exactly what's the next outcome. And all of a sudden, one of our nurses from Canada came into the picture, and then she started to question the baby's stomach and heart. And then suddenly, after 3 or 4 or 5 or 10, 15, 20 seconds, and the baby pushed a liquid into the back, and then all of a sudden we hear the cry of life coming to place. And that was the most amazing and the most moving things in my life, and because of the fact that we were assisted, how precious it is to give, to save someone's life at a particular moment, that you are the right places at the right time. And I believe we got to give credit to all the staff, the member for the Hope for Tomorrow, who did such a miracle to revive the baby and by giving life to that was deserved, or it was the most amazing, moving part of my life. If someone was asking me, what did you do for you to accomplish this by saving this baby's life? And we have to give credit to all the staff that was with us at that time. And now the baby, just last week was Mother's Day in Haiti, and Christians is doing very well. And that was grace for God, of the power of hope for tomorrow and the staff, and so do we have to thank them.
Well, you did a wonderful job. If it wasn't for Harry Dorvillier with the Hope for Tomorrow Foundation, the mother would have died for 4 hours in ambulance to Port-au-Prince from Lake Cai. The baby would have died. But Harry Dorvillier came to the doctors with Hope for Tomorrow Foundation, said, you have to save the mother and the baby. And they did. And about 10 years ago, he was honored at a banquet with 600 people in Buffalo with a humanitarian award. Let's switch to labor law. You have been affected with your business for the past 15 years. You term these people ghost patients, that there's improper interpretation and activation of labor law in the United States. Could you talk about that, Harry Dorvillier?
Yeah. Thank you, Josh. I mean, Brian. Labor law actually was enacted in 1938 by President Roosevelt. But remember that we were actually colonized by the UK, but the system of the Social Security actually came from the Germany. Germany come with the old age, which is called the Social Security. And the system was copies from to all the 25 countries in Eastern Europe, and then including UK, and bring the Social Security system in the United States. And that's how we get what they call by Social Security taxes, where once you working, the employer pay on the payroll taxes. That's an obligation as a W-2 employee. That's called Social Security taxes, that an obligation for the employer. And that is actually 6.2% on the Social Security taxes, and the Medicare is 145. And then the same for the employer. And then when the W-2 is produced, then you have to pay Social Security taxes, federal taxes, and state taxes. If you live in the city, then you pay city taxes. So now, when someone is misclassified as independent contractor in United States, it's when the employer, instead of giving the employee a W-2 form, the employer misclassified the employee by giving them a 1099. What that means is that the employer failed to pay Social Security taxes. In other words, they fail to give the old age the due process, because when someone is working, once you are become 65, you're gonna have to pay social, you're gonna have to receive Social Security for your tomorrow. So if you have your loved one, you die, you could receive the Social Security on the baby side until they have 24 years and still in college. So the Social Security is an insurance policy that was enacted in 1938. And that's the reason why that when the labor law was enacted, that's what people in the South were from Tennessee, Mississippi. They were working from Tennessee and take a car and go to work in Mississippi and the railroad. So those people were misclassified. When they get hurt on the job, then they have no workman compensation, and they have no health insurance, and they have the hospitalization and the Medicare. And that's what President Roosevelt enacted the law in 1938 to produce insurance from the employer to the employee, but it's an obligation. So those three types of insurance, when an employer misclassified their employee, are the following: the Social Security taxes, because that is a tax issue and that is a tax loophole. And unemployment insurance taxes that goes to the state in which that the employee resides. And workman compensation if the employee fell into the job. Those are the three requirements. One is on the federal, the other one, those two are on the state. And that's what they call under United States, under Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938, of is a tax loophole and a tax mechanics that was actually, in fact, to take place. But since 1938, the law then applied and the wrong aspirations. And that's where in 2007, I come to a federal government scheme that happened to me personally in my business. And I will elaborate on that. He was on with my supervisor and an attorney called Jonathan Burstein, who created a ghost nurse. And they have a good name, and the Social Security doesn't belong to the nurse, nor the license. So therefore, the orchestration of the scheme where the supervisor played the role of that nurses, where she used an address in West Indies, Jamaica, on a P.O. box. She used an address in Georgia for her license, but the P.O. box in Jamaica, that's where she resides, had the license. And then she used two other addresses on upstate New York to receive the paycheck. And whenever she received those paychecks, she go and cash it into that person's name. So after like a good 7 months, now the attorney who's partner with the supervisor goes to work, because the attorney knows the government, which is know the judge, he's friendly with them because he's really part of the same government. So now under law, they said in the Fair Labor Standards Act, it's called a liability. The liability that just come and inform you. Those liability are taxes that the employer who received a 1099 now, the employer who did not pay federal taxes. So now Claudia Gell, in fact, received a 1099. But prior to Claudia Gell in 2007 to receive a 1099, there was an audit by two Harris Nurses Registry with the Department of Labor, say nurses at Harris Nurses Registry were independent contractor because the nurse worked per diem, or they were considered to be a domestic employee because of the fact the law said if you are receiving federal government funding, the Medicare and the Medicaid, you are exempt from the labor law, because if the government pays per hour, it's only per visit the nurse gets paid. They don't get paid per hour, because a visit could be 4 hours, a visit could be 12 hours, a visit could be 8 hours. So having said that, therefore, a nurse is considered to be a domestic worker. And a domestic worker, you could have someone as a nurse, as a living, they spend 24 hours and you pay them for 12. You don't know what time they go to sleep. You don't know what time they go to work. But to get that federal taxes, let's leave the nurses apart, to get to the federal taxes because of the fact that on the government itself, when they produce an order, the doctor give the order for a nurses to go and receive 24-hour cases, care into the patient's home. That means the nurse gets paid per visit. A visit could be 12 hours to 12 hours. Now, when the government gives that order, if the nurses stay there for 4 hours or 8 hours, that means you can only bill the Medicare or the Medicaid for 4 hours. Therefore, there is no holiday that the government give a different rate. Therefore, that's what they call them independent contractor or fee for service for nursing. So now, when the audit is done since 1999, they said all the nurses at Harris are independent contractor for unemployment insurance purposes. Therefore, our 1099 pay onto for the government. So when it comes to 2007, since we have the ruling by the one of the state agency, therefore the state agency has priority, because under law itself, Senator Darnell in 1945 said there is two ways that you go into the federal government when you misclassify the worker. One is on the federal taxes for Social Security benefits, and then the other two goes to the state for workman compensation and unemployment insurance. So therefore, let's say a procedure has to take place on the merit of the federal government. They call it the penalty section of the Fair Labor Standards Act. They call it the 29 U.S.C. 216 A, B, C, D. What that mean is, and the 29 216 A, because of the fact this the corporate officer whom that who registered the corporation did not pay their obligation, they make more money instead of produce the Social Security taxes. Because if you don't pay taxes, the government have the right to really assume the responsibility to make sure that those workers really get paid the right. So since the reimbursement rate at that time was $23, and we paid the nurses, the LPN, $20, they only have $3 markup just to pay to pay the overhead. So the court of the penalty section on the penalty that said the first 29216A mean that if the Department of Labor did an audit, find a violation, that the corporation to be in violation of the minimum wage and the maximum of hours, therefore they could go to the federal judge to enforce that procedure. So that procedure called the 29216B. The 29216B, there are four sections of the 29216B. I know it's a little awkward. You have the U.S. Department of Labor that has to be involved. You have the IRS, because when the employer send the 1099, they stay into the record of the contractor. And now you have the U.S. Attorney General that's supposed to be involved on the case, because the only entity that make the United States is the power of the U.S. Attorney General to the Justice Department now. On the Justice Department, you have 29216B, where all those four branch of this agency has to be involved to enforce the Social Security taxes, because only the private cause of action, but that's only under the IRS code, and you have to have a sign of power of attorney to change the 1099 to become a W-2 form just to pay Social Security. But on the audit, if you have 300 clients, 300 power of attorney that has to go from the IRS part that was sent by the employer, now has to go back to change those 1099 to become a W-2 form. So therefore, since 1938, the federal government and the federal judge, they violate what they call by the disclosure law, because if we found the employee itself signed a power of attorney to have their 1099, to change it from the W-2 to the W-2 form, the judge cannot order Harry DeVille and Harry's Nurses Registry to say you violate the Fair Labor Standards Act in 1938, because the judge violated the disclosure law, because the case, before to be anticipated in the district court, you must have the consent, and the consent must come from a tax liability. In other words, if you don't have a tax liability, you cannot get to the district court. So therefore, prior to get to the district court on the tax liability and the Federal Tort Claim Act of 1938, you need to have a consent. And those consent has to be implemented by you as the taxpayer itself. to sign a power of attorney to the Attorney General's office.
Well, we're learning.
If you file the Attorney General's office, you cannot be having a case number.
We're learning.
The case number now has to be signed by the power of, by you to give the power of attorney to become the United States. And that's why it becomes the United States versus the corporate officer.
Well, thank you, Harry, for this very detailed explanation of labor law in the United States, particularly in the healthcare industry. We'll ask more about that in a moment. We're speaking with a great humanitarian who helped save numerous lives in Haiti, especially 13 years ago, a baby who would have passed with the mother. And Harry Dorvillier very much was very aggressive and forceful to have the Hope for Tomorrow Foundation intervene and save both lives. Our guest today, Harry Dorvillier, a CPA, graduate of Pace University. If you're listening in Jamaica, New York, Buffalo, or Montreal with our 50,000 watts of clear channel power, drop us a note. Please write to Brian Rusk, Bet AM 1520, 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Buffalo, New York, 14226. I'd like to thank those who called regarding our recent guest, self-made billionaire John Katsimatidis, Rita Cosby of WABC Radio, and author Dr. Harry Agress with a new hit book on retirement. Coming up, we're going to have Bob McLaughlin, who's with Touchstone Resorts in Muskoka, talking about the tourism industry in Canada. Again, the information about Harry Dorvillier, he's an accountant, expert in labor law, CPA graduate of Pace University, 34 years in the healthcare industry. Our guest today, I'd like to talk a little bit more about Haiti. Now, Harry, when you organized for the Hope for Tomorrow Foundation, the Tulakai Haiti, a humanitarian mission, I understand there were dozens, hundreds of people waiting for donated pediatric, orthopedic, cataract, vein surgeries. Tell us about the need for health care in Haiti today, Harry Dorvillier.
Well, we know we have a great need coming because right now they have no hospital, they have no airport, but the only open airport they have is in Cap-Haitien. So the circulation is very poor. I believe the last time now they sent 150 soldiers to really restore the see if it could really get against the gang, because right now there is no hospital, no circulation in the street. The situation is very, very awkward because the gangs are taking over the country as a whole. So we need the support of the United States, because the government cannot really do it themselves. Because after President Aristide demolished the army, so now the gangs and the police cannot do that much, because the police only concentrated in the Port-au-Prince. And the gangs are coming, you know, hijack all the part of the population and then seize their goods and bring them to on the black market. So the situation right now, it's very awkward. And we spent $1 billion. It was $1 billion after the earthquake to make Haiti better, or to really have Haiti the second in the Caribbean and after Santo Domingo. But it's nothing happening right now except in chaos and failure that is not properly distributed the funds. And it's just going backwards instead of forwards. So we need every help that we can get to get a jump start in Haiti. That's where the Hope for Tomorrow can come in by giving some help to the needed in Haiti.
Very good. A little plug here For over 60 years, the AMPO Legal newspaper has been Polonia's newspaper, providing readers with news, feature articles, great columns, and recipes. Get this community newspaper delivered to your home or business each week for less than 70 cents. Visit our website, www.ampolegal.com, and click on the subscribe menu to order a print or digital edition. That's www.ampolegal.com or call at 716-835-94. That's 716-835-9454 for the AMPO Legal newspaper. We have a minute and a half left on the Rusk Report. Harry, what do we need with a labor law to correct what you and your company went through?
Well, there is what they call by injustice in the system, because if you're looking at the federal government, if you're looking at a lot of cases that just goes to the federal judge, they call them subject matter jurisdiction. They don't have jurisdiction over the matter. And that's where the senator only can say that the procedure in which for the court to accept the case, it has to come from a federal agency. And that's why it becomes the United States versus John Doe. So the mechanics in which the procedure of the, because after my case, they have million cases like similar in my case, because they are not meeting the requirements because of the fact that it's a scheme that is into the government, because the government really cannot disclose, cannot force the corporate officer. It's basically, once you are into the federal government, it's a criminal case. It cannot be a civil case.
I'm sorry, we have to come to a close, Harry. We've run out of time. We'll talk about labor law in another program. Special thanks to Kevin Carr, Director of Production for 20 years, and thank you for enlightening us about Haiti and labor law. Harry Dorvillier, have a great week.